trying to slap Band-Aids on them that aren't clearly are not working.
Exactly. And while we're on the medical part, I just want to add things that we forget about pregnant, houseless women. Mm-hmm. Some of them are afraid to go to the hospital because they get their baby taken away from them. And we need to stop doing that. That don't mean they're bad parents. They're just in a bad situation. Okay, Emily.
Yeah, I kind of want to echo what was said already, which is, and just to remind people that here we are again in this process where we're essentially fighting over crumbs. It's like we're all these different people around the table saying, like, no, you pay for a trash can. No, you pay for it. No, you pay for it. I mean, it's ridiculous. Portland is not a poor city.
Not at all.
There is wealth here. This is probably the most prosperous time in history. And here we are fighting over what, you know, like... public bathrooms. This is something that shouldn't be that hard, right? So I don't know. I'll leave you with what I think the solution is, and it's to tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
And the question I have that people always ask me, why are people afraid of houseless people? Think about that, our listening audience, and come up with the answer and contact KBOO, and I'm sure it'll be on someone's radio show.
And I want to thank everyone and all our guests tonight and our listeners and our callers. Right to Survive has a meeting tomorrow at Join. That is 1435 Northeast 81st Avenue from 5 to 7 p.m. If you'd like to come and see us in action. And I also want to thank our guest and all the work that was put into the Compassionate Change District and the many, many people and hours that got us to this point.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
All right. It's with love and care.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Dance and Resist, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. at Open Signal, Portland Community Media Center. Dance and Resist is Portland's only activist-led live television dance party. For Crying Out Meow Productions is proud to welcome back host and activist Cat Meow Garcia, joined this time by musician DJ Vicky for a night of resistance. Dance and Resist practices reclaiming community space through dance and revolutionary education. There will be a green screen photo booth and costumes are highly encouraged. Again, that's Dance and Resist 2, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. till midnight at Open Signal, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar in Portland. Underground hip-hop artist Serengeti, also known as Kenny Dennis, returns to Portland for one night only. Local artists Champion Loves You, Mosley Wata, and DJ Cars and Trains will also perform. Again, that's Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar, 2415 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Dance and Resist, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. at Open Signal, Portland Community Media Center. Dance and Resist is Portland's only activist-led live television dance party. For Crying Out Meow Productions is proud to welcome back host and activist Kat Meow Garcia, joined this time by musician DJ Vicky for a night of resistance. Dance and Resist practices reclaiming community space through dance and revolutionary education. There will be a green screen photo booth and costumes are highly encouraged. Again, that's Dance and Resist 2, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. till midnight at Open Signal, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 7:07. You are tuning in to KBOO 90.7. Up next is Hard Knock Radio.
Thank you. Name of the song is Back on the Scene. It is the first cut from, I don't know if they call themselves a group called Stony Hawk or if that's just the name of the album. But anyway, these are well-known Bay Area, and at this point, you know, legends just in the music industry itself. Two forces coming together. We're talking about A-Plus from the Mighty Hiro crew, and we're talking about Sunspot Jones, Mystic Journeyman, a.k.a. Living Legends. You know, for a lot of us, man, you know, we know you all as just institutions on your own, right? We could do, and there have been entire documentaries just on Hiro. There's been documentaries just on Living Legends, and you still ain't heard the whole story. Both of your respective crews have been around, gosh, I want to say at least 25 years or close to it at this point, even more, right? Right, so we can't lie and say we're 30 years old no more, right? So you all are legends in that regard and have a mainstay. But, you know, to see, you know, parts of these two empires come together, that seems like a big celebration. So let's talk about Stony Hawk. Let's talk about A-Plus, Sunspot Jones, how you all are coming together, what you all are doing, and just the legacies that you've really laid behind. I'll start off with you, Sunspot. And let me just say one other thing, too, just to give the full resume. Both of y'all produce. Both of y'all are MCs. Both of y'all can do movies and have done your own film projects. Both of y'all own your own, you know, outlets. Like, we're in the Hiro building right now. You know, this is they spot. You know, this ain't like, oh, please let us stay. No, this they spot. You got your own spot. You got your own labels. So you're also, you know, have personified that Bay Area ethos of do for self. So that's the real good part. So let's start off with you, Sunspot. What is this about?
Man, basically, Stony Hawk is a collaboration between one Living Legends member and one Hieroglyphics member. And, like, we've been friends since we was little kids, since Cartridges and, you know, out there just doing whatever we can create in our mind. And we kind of came together and created something, you know, together as Stony Hawk.
Is this the first time y'all have come together to do projects?
This is the first time we've come together to do a full project. Once in the past, I think like around 2007, 2008, we did a song for my first solo project. The album was My Last Good Deed. The song, I think, was Far Away, I think was the name of the song. Yeah, so that was the first song we did together, but this is the first project we've ever worked on together.
What was it like? You know, I mean, and how did it break down? Who does the production? Who does the writing? Or, you know, is it a completely collaborative thing? How does this work?
Well, I was sitting on a whole bunch of beats that I thought were really dope, and they were supposed to be for like a project I was working on that just didn't come together. I was just trying to build my vault up, and I had a whole bunch of beats. I was just sitting on them. And then I was thinking to myself, man, forget it. I'm not going to hold on to these no more. I'm going to reach out to a few people that I know that I want to work with, but people that I know personally, you know, not just a cold call or nothing, or an industry call. So I sent out this big Dropbox file full of beats to these four different MCs that I already knew and I was close with, and Sunspot was one of them. And I was pitching it as like, let's do five song EPs, and I was just kind of like, whoever really comes back at me, I'll know that they're taking it seriously or whatever. So after a while, Sunspot just started doing songs. He did some songs. Well, actually, when I called him and told him about it, it was just like about 5, 6 in the morning. I was just like working on hella beats and trying to hash out this idea. So anyway, I hit him. He was like down, and he started sending songs back. And we were both like them, and they sounded really good. And then it kind of just turned into, next thing you know, he sent 10 songs. And I was like, wait, hold on. And then he sent 15, and I was like, whoa. And then he sent like 20, and I'm like, hey, bro. Like, but the songs were all good and stuff. So, and none of the other people was even getting back, really. And so at some point, we had like 23 songs or something. And we just, you know, from there, just try to think of what we going to do with these. He wanted to put them all out in one project and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, what we have here in this project, Stony Hawk, is what we ended up with, putting out of all those songs, 13.
Let me ask you this, and I'm going to come to you, Sunspot, in a second. You know, just your production, you know, I mean, it's two things. You're a prolific producer. He's a prolific writer, so I could see him doing 50 songs in a night and keep it doing. But just in terms of production right now, for people who don't know, how has the game changed? It used to be once upon a time you were sampling, chopping, screwing. Then it seemed like people were getting away from it because there was a lot of taxing that was coming on, like that's my drum beat, you know, and all that. So where are we at in 2019 when you go into the studio and you produce?
Man, I just... You know, I'm mindful of that and you know, lawsuits. We've been sued a few times ourselves, Hieroglyphics, members of Hieroglyphics, for sample infringement and stuff. So I try to sample really creatively, and also I play stuff too, because, you know, I came into production already knowing how to play keyboards just from piano lessons as a kid and a little bit of guitar from lessons when I was a kid. So I try to approach it to where, like, sometimes I'll just use a sample anyway, like, you know, if we get sued for this, I know I'm making noise or whatever. But for the most part, we try to avoid that, and I try to sample creatively. And that's kind of how the beats were that ended up being on this project.
Do you has the equipment changed? You know, are we looking at new things in 2019?
I mean, you know, every producer is different and they have their preferences. Me, I produce. I'm in the box. I'm in the computer with my MIDI instruments. You know, whether it's a keyboard or whether it's a drum pad or MP or APC or whatever. But I'm completely in the computer at this point. You know, and then, you know, if I have people come in and play live, then, you know, I just have people come into the studio and play stuff live. And I either chop that or leave it as is. However, but you know, I'm completely in the box these days.
How important is it just to be able to play instruments? I was just talking with Dwayne Wiggins the other day, and he was breaking down just that whole history. And when you look at everybody from E-40 to Short to, I guess, you too, you know, everybody know how to play an instrument. Like, you, if there was no records to sample, y'all could get down anyway.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, of course, I love sampling, and I came into the game like with using, you know, sample breaks, you know, all of that stuff in the early 90s, late 80s. But for me, knowing how to read music and knowing how to play music has definitely had an influence on my production style and my capabilities as a producer. Like, I could play whatever. Like you said, if there were no samples, I could play something that'll sound like a sample and chop that, you know. And not to say that makes a better or lesser producer. It's just from person to person. It's just different, and it's definitely something I go to as an asset in when I'm making beats or composing music.
Yeah, because you can also sample yourself too.
Yeah, absolutely, like, yeah, you could sit there and it's kind of like making a beat. You just make a sample, and right. You spend all your time making the sample, and then you make a beat with that. And you know, I didn't make it up, but people do it all the time.
And I'm sure people walking around going, "Man, where you get that James Brown cut from?" You just like, well, you know, I don't know. Exactly. Meanwhile, you had flipped the guitar and you know did a couple of things. Yeah. Sunspot Jones in the building, man. Let me ask you, you know, what was it like coming together with Hiero? You know, how have you all seen that, and what's the significance of it?
Well, I mean, basically, well, first and foremost, I want to say just my part on the album. I sent him all those tracks back that I recorded because I was going through my own little personal thing because my mom was getting kicked out of her house. Like, everybody's kind of getting gentrified in Oakland, and I kind of just... took all that energy I had right then and just put it into making some songs and making something that I thought was really dope. And this music just inspired me in ways that I hadn't been inspired in a while. You know, I make beats. MPC 2000 XL is my best friend. My Akai S1000 was my first, you know, thing I had. I had SP1200 I learned on, you know what I mean? I had the ASR X Pro, which I had to throw away because I didn't like anymore. We both know that the sounds on that is just, like, horrible. But that's a whole nother story.
During the Mystic Journeyman, during the 4001,
that's
you was using the keyboard thing?
I was using the Akai S1000 and the MMT8, and that's how I used to get down. You know, we had a little spot in the warehouse, and we used to just be in there all day, just, like, making songs, and that's how it happened. So this is my first time really just being with another producer all the way and just, like, going, yo, you know, I'm going to trust you to get down with this, and, man, it turned out amazing. You know?
What was that like to give up that sort of control? I mean, that requires some trust and confidence.
It took a lot because, like, you know, I really am just so used to just being in control. Always, I'm a control freak, and it's just like being in that moment of going, you know what, I'm gonna let it go, and you kind of rhyme different when you're on other people's beat. You're not thinking about the snare, you're not thinking about the hi-hat, you're not thinking about the kick. Like, I'm thinking about too much when I'm rapping on my own beats, you know what I'm saying? So it was good to get on somebody else's tracks, and I rap completely different. Like, I have a completely different outlook on life when I'm rapping over other people's beats.
And you don't have to worry. You can go to sleep, and he got to do the mix down.
Yeah.
You can go to the movies and get your KFC on.
Well, yeah, actually, I don't mess with KFC, but I go to churches if I'm going to go. Nah. We actually mixed them both down. We both mixed it down in San Francisco at Data Stream with Bruce Lighten, and it just came out amazing. But the way it all came together, you know, is serendipitous because it was a long time coming. And honestly, like, I've known Dell since I was a kid. I knew him since I was a kid. I knew Pep since I was a kid. It's just kind of like it was bound to happen, you know?
Yeah, and y'all live like damn near next door to each other, you know, which is funny.
Right.
Let me ask you this, man. This is just a hypothetical because I just talked about your writing, you know, prowess, that you can sit there and pen a lot of stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So if Tupac is around and you're in a studio and he's in a studio, who writes the most song at the end of the day? Who would pen that many songs?
Well, I'm not going to lie. Whose songs are going to be doper in the end? Let's say no. I love Pac so much, and he is actually a very large inspiration in my life. So, I mean, I'm not going to disrespect him and say, like, you know, I'm going to write more songs than him. But I get my write on. And now, actually, I don't even write no more. I just freestyle line for line. It's way more fun, you know, and you get way more out of it. Like, I used to sit down and write raps for, like, 3 hours, one verse. And by the time I finish writing this verse, I'm like, damn, now I got to spit it. I'm thinking about too many other things. You know, people call me on the phone, someone at my door, whatever it may be. But now, like, you know, when I go into it and I'm like, all right, this is what I want to talk about in this song. This is what I'm thinking about. So I just freestyle the first line. I listen to it, freestyle the next line. Listen to it, freestyle the next line. You know what I mean? And it just, it's actually, it comes out way doper than I ever expected. And, you know, as long as you keep the content in, it's all dope. Because, you know, some people when they freestyle, they're like, you know, rhyming stuff that makes no sense for the moment, you know, and there's no real content. I always try to stay really content-based with everything when I do. So.
That's a challenge if you're coming off the dome like that.
No, it's really not. It's just be about your content. A lot of people are all about the party more than the content, and I've never been about the party more than I've been about the content. I kind of always mixed them together.
You know? Well, let's take a song off this album that you think personifies that. You know, you all have a bunch of cuts on there. What is it? The Pretty Girls kind of had like a little reggae flavor. What's up with that, man? You know, what was going on? I mean, we're here, you know.
That's a trip. And also to add what you were saying before, this is the first time I've been a producer on a project just with one person. So that on the flip side of what he was saying, it's also vice versa, the same with me. As far as Pretty Girls, when I made the Dropbox file full of beats, one day I just got on this reggae thing and I made about like five reggae beats straight. I was gonna put it out as an EP and some kind of instrumental or EP or try and get artists over it. Nothing really happened of it. But I put a few of those reggae beats in that Dropbox file. And it was literally like about 40 beats in there. You know what I'm saying? So he just started picking what he liked, and that was just one of the beats he liked. And yeah, definitely when I made it, I was on a reggae kick. I spent like a whole weekend just making like 5 reggae beats.
And the cool thing is you just was yourself. You didn't try to, you know, become Beanie Man or Shaggy or nothing. You just did your thing, but it's a reggae beat.
Yeah, and the funny thing is it was the first song that we did. So like I told you, my mom was getting kicked out and all that stuff, and he had sent me these beats like 2 months before, and I just didn't do nothing because I was dealing with my mom and that whole thing. I finally came home, and I was listening to the beats, and I was like, oh, this beat really is dope. And I just kept saying, I got a new mic and I didn't know how to hook it up, and I was like just trying it out. I was like, pretty girls, pretty 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 girl. I was like, oh wait a minute. And I only recorded the chorus. And then 3 weeks later when I came home again, I recorded the song. And then actually I recorded all the songs at that point. He gave me 40 beats, I recorded 32 of them.
Damn. You don't mess around.
It was supposed to, y'all got to remember, it was supposed to be 5 beats. It was supposed to be 5. I was like, I really had to be like, whoa, okay, I need to make some more beats. You like cleared out my vault. Yeah. Cleared out my vault.
Yeah. Here's the song, Pretty Girls. We're going to come back, continue our conversation with Stony Hawk. That is A-plus from the Mighty Hi-Ro Crew, Souls of Mischief, and Sunspot Jones, Mystic Journeyman, a.k.a. Living Legends. We'll be right back.
Bouncy, yellow bikini, the beach is elegante. Margaritas, aritos, and tequila. Mi amo bendito, peso make me guapo. Americano, dank cigarero. Mucho gusto, te amo. Si fuego, we're bueno. No weave, we know. Makeup or corn toes. Finer than the model, finer cause she finer than your honor. I'ma give attention to this event. Miss no panty line, and I'ma crown a queen. Queen bouncing, bouncing game. Mr. Chocolate with vanilla. Oh, this love will never end. Pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty girls.
We're back here, Davey D, hanging out with you. Hard Knock Radio. Two legends in the building, man. I mean, it is, you know. Like, if we brought all your crew and all the Hi-Ro crew, there'd be no room in this thing. I mean, it would just be like, you know, just the crews alone. Look, you know, when you think about just that and then all the subsidiaries and people you touch, how does that break down? If we go through the Living Legends kind of, you know, family tree. You know, yeah, and who do you think really stands out, or people just kind of overlooked and need to know, or you know, in Living Legends that they'd be surprised, be like, yeah.
who is the ones that's looked over? I mean, I think everyone knows the Grouch, everybody knows Eli, everybody knows Merce, everybody knows Mystic Journeyman because we started off with this whole thing. Man, but people that's overlooked probably is Aesop. You know, he's in our group. He's really dope. I love his voice.
That's right. And we always know the Aesop Rockies and all that, and we forget that there was the Aesop first.
Yeah, there's Aesop Fables.
That's right.
As he likes, because he got lots of fables.
Like Black Aesop.
A Black Aesop, that's right. The Black Wolf, he goes by that, too. It's funny, too, because KRS-One back in the day tried to sign us to Reprise Records when he was A&R over there, and we had this tape. And the tape had, like, I made it, the graphics on it were all of us in an L. And Aesop had the wolf thing on it. And he was like, "This, I can't believe I'm seeing this. I just want you guys just off this wolf mask." I was like, Aesop, wow. Mm-hmm. Aesop's just really dope, I think, you know, because like I said, he has a great voice, great personality and attitude towards life. Picasso gets overlooked, too. But mm-hmm. Picasso is very talented as an artist and an MC, has a great voice as well. Scarab, oh my God, he's like one of the dopest lyricists that I've ever heard, you know what I'm saying? Because he can just put words together. Him and Eli are just, you know, the three melancholy gypsies, that's him, Eli, Merce all together, and they're just an amazing trio, you know? So there's a lot of people that we've touched through our music that, I mean, are in the Bay, you know, just from UHB, the Unsigned Hella Broke shows we used to have, started at Jackson Street Studios. It was like $3.99 with a pack of Top Ramen to get in, and you get free Kool-Aid. And before that, we had the power, the electricity shows at our house at 4001 when we couldn't pay the bills. So we
you were doing rent parties.
Right, we throw big ass parties, and there'd be people all the way down the hall, all the way out the door, and never got in trouble for it. And cops never came because we was always about good vibes, and that's how we knew. We keep touching people with good vibes and just don't get caught up on the gang. Because one of our first shows we did was at Flankers at on Hagenburger, and that's when we threw the first broadcast summer jam. And someone got shot and killed at the venue the day before. And they're like, we're not sure we're going to let you do this because you might have some more shootouts. And I'm like, trust me, it's not going to be a problem. And like I said, it wasn't a hitch.
There you go. A plus, Hiro's family tree, who the ones that are kind of overlooked. And they're just seeing, you know, a lot of folks that have come through this door.
Oh, man. Let me think about that. I would say, man, A plus is kind of like, underrated as a producer. People don't Let me stop.
But that is true. People don't often see you because they see you all on stage, right. And they forget. You know that boy produces. You know?
Yeah, man.
I got fresh raps, but we got flows and beats.
But honestly, I don't know. I would have to say, the person I think is most overlooked would be my brother DJ Torre. Because you know, he got a lot of slaps. He's made a lot of songs that people like, you know, like from Hieroglyphics that Hiero fans like that they may not know who made. And also he's our DJ. You know, Domino's up there working the beat machine too, but like he's the DJ. It's the backbone of the whole thing. And like there's so many MCs and producers and more visible artists in Hieroglyphics than him, but to us he's indispensable. And we, you know, the way we do our stuff is everybody. It's a democracy. It's like everybody has equal say and equal ownership and all of that stuff. So even though we all equal, he probably doesn't get as much shine as the rest of us because we're all like, you know, rapping and right. All of that stuff.
So what is the family? It's Souls of Mischief. Yeah. It's Casual, Pep Love, right? Dell,
Domino, and Souls of Mischief, and DJ Torre.
But you also used to have somebody who went on and do gospel rap for a bit, right?
Yeah, Extra Pro, we kind of separated from him. He separated from the crew like back in the day, right before we released the first Hiero full-length album. He does gospel rap. He lives in Texas. And also the brother Jay Biz, he used to be he was also a DJ and a producer. And he just stepped away from the music business altogether. It wasn't for him. And, you know, we always wished him the best.
And, you know, how ironic is that?
Huh? Marcella.
Oh, yeah, Prince Ali.
Oh, that's right. We forget. That's right. Prince Ali. Maybe. That's right. Yeah. Let's give the background on Prince Ali.
Prince Ali, man, it's like the way we know him is that, like, he's a B-boy and an MC. And, you know, he been on the scene out here in the Bay Area like forever, just as a patron as well as an aspiring artist. And you know,
and nowadays, who is Prince Ali?
Oh, Marcella, man. Award-winning. It's a trip, man, because it's like that's our brother, man, and he's like literally one of the best people I know in the world. To see somebody like him winning, that's good for the culture. That's good.
He's a major actor. Yeah. You know, yeah. We've seen him. He was just in what was it? Well, first we know him from Luke Cage, yeah, right?
Even before that, he was
Moonlighting.
The 4800 was like his first real exposure, and he did like seasons on there where he had a regular reoccurring role. But he's been in a million things. Benjamin Button. He's been in a. I mean, you could say
he just was in Green Book.
Yeah, True Detective, like you said. I mean,
so he comes out of the Hiero camp, basically.
Well, we put out his first album, and I mean, he's a real deal spitter for real, and you know, it's just good to see what he's done. He really had to. We was gonna do more music, but he really put 100% into acting. He even said, "Yo, look, brothers, man, I'm focusing. This is I'm 100% putting all of my energy into that. I simply can't do both." And of course, we was like, "Man, go get the world and look at him, man." So much love to the brother.
You know, it's interesting because he's an actor, but you all have put out your own film projects. You know, last time we talked, Sunspot, you were just doing something that was, I think, on the WB or one of them channels, right? Yeah. So what's that been like, you know, dabbling into the film and then even knowing that some of your folks and some of your projects have gone on? Of course, the High Road documentary, seen all around the world, and, you know, and you know, definitely has set a standard for, you know, how we're going to do these things. So what's that been like?
For me, it's been like a thing of, like, it's just amazing that I could be a part of the film industry as well as the music industry, but it all goes together, you know what I mean? Like, my first film I actually got out around the world was Street Legends, which was a Living Legends documentary, and I remember I sold that to Japan, and when I sold that to a distributor in Japan, I was like, oh, this is for real. We could really do this. So after that, or around then too, I did a short called Resin. I entered that into the Sundance Film Festival. And, like, you know, for me, it's a thing of film, music, writing, poet, all of this is all the same. It's just how you do it, you know? And as I get older, I mean, I got so much love and respect for Chuck D, but I just don't see myself being an elder statesman in hip hop, like going to shows and clubs, all that stuff, making that my main bread and butter. I use him as an example because he's someone I hella respect, you know, mm-hmm. that I always saw myself being, you know, towards that path. But I'm a writer first and foremost. So whether it's music, film, you know, poetry, children's books, I'm just getting down with it, you know?
Right.
And I'm an only child, foster kid, so my imagination is crazy, you know, already. So the film industry for me, though, is so white, and it's in Hollywood, that it's weird. So I, me, myself, I'm trying to bring people that look like me into the business so I can change it.
But now Oakland has the renaissance with Ryan, yeah. with Boots, yeah. with David and Raphael, you know, and all those guys spit, and, you know. I mean, they all rap, yeah. you know.
But the only problem is that it's not enough of us, and we need to get more of us in there. And because, like, our stories do matter, we do exist, and they're powerful stories. So that's what I want to be a part of.
Right. How are you all with the film? Because it seemed like, you know, not only with the success of the documentary, but, you know, Dell and the Gorillaz and everybody, it seemed like that's also been like the natural jump off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, like Sunspot said, man, it's all art. It's just different ways in how you do it. One thing that we've gotten into, and as a matter of fact, tomorrow night, I know this is probably, I don't know when this is going to air, but for the sake of this interview, tomorrow night we're doing our second filming of the High Road Comedy Circle.
Talk about this a little. What is this?
Well, what we do is we have this building, the High Road HQ. It's a pretty big piece of land. We bought it like in 2003, and
when people are like, I'm not moving to Oakland.
Right.
No,
yeah,
no, I'm not moving here. You know.
You know that independent label money was like we were like we gotta buy something that's gonna like. Increase in value and such stuff, and that you know that's a whole other thing too. Like we've gotten the land acquisition and gaining assets and trying to teach other you know not just black people but our people, our culture that like you can do this. There's little ways you can do it without having to be super rich or having this big ass job. So that's a whole other thing. But as far as High Road Comedy Circle, we have an audience that, you know, that comes to pay like it's a comedy club, but we film it and we film, and then we're gonna edit out the commercials. We have musical guests. We're gonna edit out the portions. I mean, the episodes. We have musical guests, and we're working on that. We're filming enough to maybe like you know sell it, or like have somebody pick it up or whatever. Right now, we're just actually filming them. We've been having good turnouts here, so we're getting into that side of stuff. But it really comes back to like what Sunspot said about art and trying to expand. You know, artist is never done. There's always more you can do. And with all these options out here, we're just trying to stick our foot in different lanes and see where it takes us. Just experiment, just going in the nature of the independent movement, just like seeing where the art takes us.
Real talk. That's the voice of A+, also Sunspot Jones. I want to play another song off this album. I want to pick this one. I like this one. It is the Vortex, Lost in Space.
Maybe just this right here.
Hey, homegirl told me be careful with those things, bro.
Wait, what's gonna happen?
You can take a dose, split a dose through the little rabbit holes. That's it goes to the toes, to your spirit animals. Comatose in the stove, barking at the cantaloupe. In the zone, gotta go, cartwheeling through the dough.
On board a basket.
Rolling out like a 4x4, hand on my head like a shark fin. Carnivore, Commodore, Salvador, Dali, or always pours. Beats on her body, fantasies and inner thoughts going through my head right before I took another dose.
Oh, no, don't you do it. Barely felt the first, so the second one I'm doing. I'm a ghost, I suppose, cause I'm not moving. Yo, eyes is closed, I'm just gone faded. YouTube and so deep in my brain, watching life's movie as it frozen in a chain. Confucius flow musical.
This Stony Hawk album, do you, you know, especially with your business understandings now, do you move that to be a soundtrack for a film? Do you market that? Do you take songs off this now?
Every song on this album could be a soundtrack for a different part of a film. So, yeah, I'll definitely be using those for stuff in the future, for sure.
Spike Lee, you better listen, man. You know, don't sleep. Two legends, A+, out of the Mighty Hyrule crew, Sunspot Jones, out of the Living Legends. Two forces coming together doing a project, and it's really the first time y'all really just kind of collaborated, even though y'all lived damn near next door to each other and have been about 25 years deep, yeah. You know, longer, in the thing.
Longer than that. I believe I met Sunspot when I was in the seventh grade. Yeah. And so that would be what, like... 87.
Don't want to say how old we are.
Oh, yeah, never mind. Yeah. So that's like we've known each other a long time, much longer than the time we haven't known each other.
Yeah.
How has Hyrule influenced Living Legend, and how has Living Legends influenced Hyrule?
I mean, on the real. I mean, growing up in Oakland, I was raised on Dangerous Dame, Too Short.
Brought back Dangerous Dame. Call my name, Dangerous Dame. Man.
These are my favorite songs. Action Pack Gangsters. So it was a thing of like, when I saw Hyrule do that, you know, it was more of like, oh, I don't have to be gangster. I don't got to be like all hood. I can be like hip hop and wordplay and do all these things. You know, I loved town music because of the bump that it hit. But I love Hyrule because they actually had smarts. And they was fresh with it. And to me, that was like combining both those worlds is all I ever cared about. Because it was like I was safe to be whatever I wanted in the middle. So, yeah.
And how has Living Legend influenced Hyrule?
Well, I could definitely say the way that my brothers and legends have influenced us is that, you know, we like Hyroglyphics and you know, specifically Dale... Souls of Mischief and Casual, we got record deals early back in the day. Like, you know, we were signed by 1991. Souls of Mischief, Dale's first album came out in 1991, so he had been signed since like 1990. And so we come from record deals and had, like, you know, we were on these labels like Jive Records and Elektra Records. And while we were doing that, like, having that career, whatever, the Living Legends and Mystic Journeyman were out there on some like, well, we don't gotta be signed, and they were really on the spirit of the independent movement way early in the game. I mean, you know, just the same from like Too Short or where we come from, out the trunk type. So when we had left our label situations under particular circumstances, we immediately was like, you know, we had taken note of what they had been doing independently. And we were like, yo, man, let's start a label and do it. Because we actually had other label offers on the table. Or people that are like, oh, you let Souls of Mischief go? Like, we got a deal for you. Like, Loud Records and all these other people. They were like, let's... They were literally like, yo, let's sign with us. And we were just soured with the major label experience. So we were like, man, how could we make... turn that those experiences and that fan base into a way that worked with us independently? And the people that were already doing it was directly around us was Living Legends, you know what I'm saying? So we could see that that was working for them, and we were like, well, how could we make that work for us? So that's a definite inspiration we got from them, because I'd already known Corey, you know what I'm saying? Right. So we were like, oh man, look at the brothers is doing that, and we made a conscious decision to be like, going back on no labels, let's go into independent. And who we see doing it is like, that's certainly something to take notice of and take inspiration and lessons from.
And the funny thing is too, we wanted to be like them when it comes to like having a label deal. Like, we wanted it so bad, but every time it got presented to us, it was the worst deal ever possible, you know?
And you already had a precedent set to go, no, we ain't going down that road.
We was already in the street. Every day I was on the block selling tapes. That was like what I did. That was my occupation, whether I was on the bus,
whether I was on Lake Mayor, whether I was on Telegraph. I was like, if these fools are going to offer us this and I'm already making this, why would I ever do it? And then, like, when my biggest legend that I love in my life, KRS-One, offered us a deal, like, at a reprise, it was for $100,000. I was like, what are we going to do? 7, 8, it's going to do with $100,000. And he was like, you know what? We're going to do like Wu-Tang. One of you is only going to sign, and that one person will be responsible for all of you. I was like, hell no, nah, dog, no, nah, no, nah, that don't even sound right. I saw what RZA did, you know, and I love RZA, but I understand this business is a business, and no. Nah.
Well, you know, from the outside looking in, and you tell me what I seen, I don't know if it influenced one another, but the contributions, I always tell people, like, Hyro found all these mini markets. You and E-40, you know, I, you know, like, people would go, we're going to go to New York, Chicago, Houston, and it'd be like, you know, I've been in funny places all around the country, like, you know, you're in the middle of Wisconsin somewhere, and people like, oh, you know Hyro? And it'd be like, yeah, how you know? Oh, they did a show here. Like in Montana, you know, be like some funny place like that, and it's like scores of stories that I've come across, so it seemed to me like y'all found all these little markets that now I think festivals have now taken advantage of. Like, festivals have come along and been like, let's follow this path, and now they kind of build their brand around it. And with Living Legends, what, you know, I always talk to people about is that you all were broken. We're like, we can make our money overseas. So we were just joking how you was in Australia, Japan, and all that. And I don't know if it influenced each other, but I often say that y'all, like, really, outside of Public Enemy, the first ones to really go into these other spots.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because there was a kind of a paradigm shift in the whole industry, just that progressive kind of music that we are all a part of that subgenre. And it was translating in the music industry as well. You know, like, the ability to sell units independently by just getting a P&D or a distribution deal or whatever. And one thing that was happening in the promotion business is that up-and-coming agencies were targeting these these other venues that were traditionally rock venues that didn't even open their doors to hip-hop because of the hectic 80s hip-hop. But this was, like, coming up around, like, mid-90s, mid to, like, you know, 95, 96, 97. They started, like, opening up the ideology to start having hip-hop come through. But their whole thing is, we don't want to have that hip-hop shoot-em-up kind of hip-hop at our venues at all. And these are, like, some real sketchy rock venues. I mean, now there's a regular tour, but I'm telling you, we hooked with an agency group. They basically were like, okay, you guys are the kind of act, because of just how we came up with it. We were like really early on the internet, the first with a website and all of that. That's around 95. So Peter Schwartz was like, listen, I can get these venues that traditionally don't hold any hip hop at all and create a routing to where you guys will come and just do this routing, and these would be places, it'll be like all this kind of test run. So doing that, really, like, it kind of revolutionized touring in the United States for underground artists. It kind of laid the tracks for that routing. You know what I'm saying? And the thing about it was, it's like, now when you look at a lot of these places, hip hop just goes there now. But back then, these venues were really like, it was something that they had to pitch, like, listen, this is not the kind of hip hop that's gonna have people getting shot up. Because if you remember that time in hip hop, like, hip hop was hot. People got shot up. So that tour routing kind of just exposed this kind of music to having a regular tour like everybody else, except not having to be in the mainstream market, but still selling out huge ass spots like everybody else.
Shout out to Peter Schwartz of the agency group. Like, really, he really laid it down for underground hip hop to go further than the block that we were on. So like, really much respect. Because after that, we were taken seriously because we actually brought people in the house.
Yeah. So what about the international thing that you all were doing?
Dude, the international thing was just crazy because, like, honestly, well, I don't know if you know the story. Me and Tom, we were living at the warehouse 4001. Got kicked out of it. Got evicted because I got in a fight with our landlord, who is being a punk. I actually tried to climb a ladder and beat him up on the roof because he was on the roof. I was just tripping, but I wasn't tripping without a reason. Anyway, we were going to, like, find another place to stay. And then I was like, you know what? forget trying to find a place to stay and struggle for the next month. Let's take this money, this rent money that we have, and buy airplane tickets and go to Europe. So after that, that changed the world. Got with the United B-Boys of Europe, came back. The internet was popping. Someone hit us up from Japan, was like, hey, would you like to come to Tokyo? Flew us to Tokyo. All of a sudden, we're in front of like 5,000 crazy kids just going nuts, ripping pants off. And I'm like,
and knowing your music.
Knowing our music. And we're in Japan. We're in Japan. I would never imagine I could be here. And all the hood people that I love, I grew up on, would never be there because it's a different kind of hip hop. But that's what blew my mind. Like, our kind of stuff is worldwide music. A lot of other stuff ain't.
Yeah.
And it comes out of Oakland.
Yeah,
it comes out of Oakland. You know, you can't say it came from New York or anything. It came straight out of the town.
For lack of a better label back in the day, people look at the kind of music we made out here. They're like, if it ain't gangster, it must be East Coasters. But that didn't have a leg to stand on then, and it's certainly well known that we out here, we were making our own kind of music. And like Sunspot said, worldwide. I mean, the first time I ever went out of the country at all besides Jamaica, which where my family's from, and that was never on any music. That was just on family. Like, we went to Japan in, like, I want to say like 94, and that's when DJ Apollo was our DJ. He was the Soul Submissive DJ back then. And they got hired. They didn't take all of us. I think Pep Love didn't go, but like, just like Sunspot said, like, them knowing your music, thousands of people showing up, like, having like flowers, presenting you with flowers when you get off the plane, and I'm like, this is incredible. And that just sparks when your dreams are all coming true and you got going to these places and you can't believe it, it just sparks a bug that I'm going to continue going. Right. And we just in that, you know, and again, like he said, they know your music. They may not be able to talk to you, but fully know every song. It's like it's really crazy. And yeah, it'll change your life. When we came back from tours like that and going overseas, and I'm sure this is the same for Sunspot and the Legends. It's like you tell the people around you, like, yo, man, get out of your box. If you only could afford to go to Reno for a weekend out the whole year, or if you could only go to, Disneyland or wherever, just get out your box, man, because it allows you to look in a way more. It kind of just expands exponentially how you see things and how you interpret things.
My boy Pablo Infinity from Bored Stiff, he has a song. It's called "You Got to Travel," and he says that you got to get to a place where you see yourself in a new situation, and now you just realize who you are. That's crazy.
That's real talk there, Public Enemy was really the first for me that I saw traveling around the world. Yeah. And it's funny because Chuck would preach that. Yeah. He'd go, get your passport. Yeah. And every time I would run into him, do you have your passport? Yeah. That's real. Brother, I ain't even want to talk to you until you get your passport. He would preach that. And then he started saying, get your passport before you can't get a passport. Because then they started passing laws, right? It made it difficult for some people to do it. But that ability to go overseas, that's where it was just crazy. But the story that I tell, as we close out, is just being in Beirut. Like, Public Enemy never went there. I went to Beirut. That was like my first trip.
I've never been to Beirut.
Right. But I was at a club in Beirut, and they knew Dell. They knew you guys.
Yeah.
Which was crazy, and it was like, you know Dell, you from the Bay, and I was like...
Somebody sent a picture of the from Iraq with the Hiro symbol carved into a rock in Iraq.
That's crazy.
It was on like the Hiro, somebody posted it. Just like a Hiro symbol, like, I don't know if it was a soldier, I don't know if it was a native, I don't know. It was just somebody that's nuts. Yeah. Like...
And 100 years from now, people are going to be out there like, oh, so Hiro came from Iraq, looking at the artist.
Eurocentric interpretation is like, yes, it must be from here since it's,
Anyway, the name of the album is Stony Hawk.
Stony Hawk!
It is A+. It is Sunspot Jones.
Part one.
Tell them about that.
Yeah.
What's that?
This is only part one. We got part two that's coming in the next few, so just be out.
It's already recorded.
It's a whole new level. Like, this was the stuff we felt like, yo, y'all just need to hear this so you can kind of know what's up. The next one is like...
Well, we'll be on the lookout for it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Pretty, pretty girls, pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty girls, pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty girls, pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty girls, pretty, pretty, pretty girls.
fancy. Yellow bikini, the beach is elegante. Margaritas, aditos, and tequila. Mi amo bendito, peso make me guapo. Americano, think cigarette. Mucho gusto, te amo. Si fuego, we're bueno. No weave, we know. Makeup or corn toes. Finer than the model, finer cause she finer than your honor. I'ma give attention to this event. Miss no panty line and I'ma crown a queen. Queen bouncing, bouncing game. Mr. Chocolate with vanilla. Oh, this love will never end. Pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty girls. Pretty, pretty, pretty girls.
Just imitation, simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue.
Yeah.
Come on.
Check out.
Why every knob just pick they Hard Knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
West Coast.
Zagadat, bim bam body ten ten. It's your boy.
It's E. Kelly.
My baby, they confuse me, yo, with that bum bum. But she got the guy where they send her money from London. She they see me like a Johnny just come. My hey, monkey they walk it, baboon he just the chop. Me, I go chop all the washing. As long as you give me my passion. Baby, make you know they rush me. I beg you, make you treat me with caution. Leg over. My baby, give me leg over. Hangover. Baby, she did give me hangover. Leg over. Oh no, man, give me leg over. Game over. She just can't give me game over.
Hey, I dey confuse you, I dey confuse when you turn around, baby. You dey make her confuse. You do all I like it, a Cameroon, mess when Rizzy boy, and baby make her confuse. Commando, you be commando, you dey command the boy, you be overload. Yeah, yeah, I know fi stand alone. I must call my guy, we for rendezvous.
Yeah, I go trap all the washing, as long as you give me my passion. Baby, make you know they rush me. I beg you, make you treat me with caution. Leg over. My baby, give me leg over. Hangover. Baby, she did give me hangover. Leg over. Oh no, man, give me leg over. Game over. She did come give me game over.
My baby, they distract me, yo, with a bum bum. But she get the guy where they send her money from London. She they see me like a Johnny just come. My monkey, they walk it, baboon, he just the chop.
Me, I go chop all the washing, as long as you give me my passion. Baby, make you know they rush me. I beg you, make you treat me with caution. Leg over. My baby, give me leg over. Hangover. Baby, she did give me hangover.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series. Every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater, Monday, February 18th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee joint which follows a Brooklyn neighborhood's racial tension on a hot summer day. Again, Do the Right Thing, showing Monday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good afternoon. I get home from school. My dad said, we're all going to the drive-in. Double feature with a monkey's uncle and the monster's got hot. You wanna go? I said, no thanks. I can think it's about summer. It's almost here. That means I get to spend some time with my lover. Yeah, he's a real dude. With his long hair, bangs, and beer boots. I'm going to the Battle of the Garages tonight. His band's playing. As I'm getting ready, all to think about tonight. I can just feel the vibrations, I can see the psychedelic colors, and I can hear the music.